And joining us now from Baghdad is John Lee Anderson. His weekly Letters from Baghdad have documented the daily experience of war inside Iraq's capital city in the pages of the New Yorker magazine. And John Lee Anderson, welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What is it like in Baghdad today, more than a week now after American forces entered the city?
Well, it's still quite surreal, but definitely calming down significantly, I'd say. For the first 4 or 5 days they were here, as you know, it was just an orgy of looting, and very dismaying to watch also because so many people became angry at the Americans for somehow letting it happen. And I definitely felt as though it was a major blunder on the U.S. Military's part not to have intervened to stop some of the more egregious looting earlier. It's allowed quite a few conspiracy theories to spread amongst the people that the Americans orchestrated it, that they wanted this to happen. In other words, it's made their PR challenge that much greater. They now need to overcome a great deal of distrust amongst people, particularly, I would say, the middle class here in the city. But in the last few days, they've been patrolling more, exercising more control. There's very few shots now. When you hear an explosion, it's usually an ammo dump that they're blowing up. There is still some looting going on. There's a warehouse near the trade fair just across the river from me where now for 3 days people have been. There's a traffic jam there, and when you finally get by it, you see that it's groups of men coming out with 50 kilo bags of tea. I think they've now exhausted the tea, but sugar from a warehouse there. And there are Marines nearby. In fact, they're stationed at the zoo just about a half a mile away. But they don't seem to be intervening to stop that. And the looters are selling it by the side of the road at knockdown prices. Yesterday, I gathered that they intervened and stopped several bank robberies, which is another feature of life here. The day before, a friend of mine was down, was near a bank being robbed and got shot at by the looters and had to run away. So it appears that they are beginning to get their act together to put the city under some kind of control. But there's, you know, things are still up in the air. The city still does not have power, except for those people who own generators, which, of course, is a tiny minority, nor running water. And so until that happens, there will be an air of stress in the city.
What about telephones? Are they back up at all?
Oh, no telephones. All the telecommunications facilities here were bombed, so no one has telephones, unless they're journalists or people with sat phones like ourselves. And that, again, is very, very few people. There are no telephones here.
What about necessities of life, food and water?
Well, Saddam, before the war began dispersing extra rations to people. There was a kind of government staple, which was allowed under the Welfare Food Program, what they call a food basket, which consisted of rice and flour and sugar and oil and that kind of thing. And he gave, I think it was 4 months' rations to all families in advance of the war. And so most families were fairly well provided for in terms of food. And those who could afford it before the war began also dug at the last minute wells for water in their, not for drinking, but for bathing or washing in their yards, in their gardens. So people are not in need of food at the moment. But, of course, many of the hospitals have been ransacked. There are now a few operating in the city, but under somewhat emergency, precarious conditions, now guarded by the Marines. Many were looted. So there are the minimal services here. People can function, but many, many people work in the state sector, and until they are summoned by the Marines, by the American military, they are in their houses waiting to know when they can return to work. Just as a journalist wandering around here and going to visit people and so on, you find people coming up to you asking you what they should do. The manager of a state dairy company has asked me for help in trying to get to the Americans here in the Palestine Hotel so that they know that he and all of his 500 employees are ready to begin work. They once provided a goodly amount of the dairy products to the capital, but no one knows about them. So there's a great deal of chaos and muddle yet to be worked through.
It seems silly on the face of it to ask a journalist what to do, but at least in one instance in your most recent essay in The New Yorker, you report that you were able to bring the Marines, to alert the Marines that looting was going on at a hospital and bring them there to protect it.
Well, yeah. I mean, this, you know, I went to visit. It was the day after the Marines arrived and all of the fighting and shooting, and I went back to a hospital where I had gone, and I know some of the doctors, and in fact, I knew the director. I know the director. And in fact, I had been there for physiotherapy for my back a few times during the war, and I wanted to see how they were doing, and I was shocked and frightened on the way there, because it's an area where there's five or six hospitals, and all of them were being looted, and there was shooting going on. And it was an alarming scene. There were no Marines to be seen. This is only a half a mile from the hotels where the Marines had arrived. And I came into the small hospital where my friends were and found a completely nightmarish scene. There were dead people lying in the foyer. There were grievously wounded men lying in cots. The director came out of an emergency operation. He had had no sleep for 3 nights. He was covered in blood, and he begged me for help. And he said that they had fought off looters literally with rocks during the night. And one young man had offered to bring in his Kalashnikov, but they were worried that he would be mistaken for a Fedayeen, one of the commandos still fighting the Americans, and they didn't know what to do. So I thought it was an easy solution to go back to the Palestine. I asked the Marines who the commander was, and fortunately he listened carefully. They were not aware of the situation, and he ordered a squad of several Marines and Humvees to come with me, and they began to protect the hospital. So it was great, because it was about to go, and it would have been the last hospital in the central part of the city, that would have been looted, and there would have been none there. So I was gratified to be able to do that, but, you know, there were so many emergencies taking place. It was, you know, journalist or not, it was just the kind of thing you try to do.
We're talking with John Lee Anderson of The New Yorker magazine from Baghdad, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. John Lee Anderson, one final question before we let you go this evening, and that is, as you look ahead, is order, just simple calmness, the most important necessity in Baghdad right now?
Yes, it really is. You have to imagine what it was like here in the months leading up to the war, and then these 3 weeks of intense bombardments and the tension. No one knew what the outcome would be, really. It may have seemed inevitable from outside Iraq. It was not here, certainly not for the Iraqis. This is a population which is been traumatized and are only now coming to terms with a new kind of way of life after many years of dictatorship and many years of war during that time. And they need peace and stability in order to get on with their lives. They would love nothing more than to simply have the basic routine of everyday life. That would be paradise for them, to simply be able to get up in the morning, go to their jobs, to have as boring as lives as possible, I think. And they also need the basics switched back on so that they can function. But yes, peace and security is the paramount thing. I think that is now being achieved.
John Lee Anderson, thank you very much.
Short term.
John Lee, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Not at all.
John Lee Anderson is a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine, and he was with us live from Baghdad. War correspondents such as John Lee Anderson constantly put themselves into harm's way to tell us what it was like to feel the explosion of a bunker buster bomb or experience the pain of a sandstorm hitting bare flesh. Sometimes reporters could be so close to the war that the crack of nearby artillery would interrupt an interview. Throughout our coverage of the war in Iraq over the past month, we brought you many of the sounds from the field and the voices of those who witnessed them firsthand.
I could see some fires in the distance, and an official told me that the planning ministry has been hit. I've just heard more sirens, which is always a precursor to more bombing.
There was a lot of explosions in the air, a lot of red tracer rounds going up.
I'm sorry, just to change it, those actually weren't aircraft. Those were cruise missiles flying overhead. We just heard about at least five cruise missiles in the past 5 minutes.
I mean, as I speak to you, and it's late here, and it's pitch black outside, just the ground is shaking from the bombs that are being dropped. Just thunderous, earth-shattering explosions. So it's not over yet, and there's still a lot of fighting.
You know, it's the surprising amount of...
Oh, jeez. Did you hear that now?
Yes, I did. What was that?
Yeah, that's our artillery firing. Just the blast from the cannon just lit up the entire camp like a flashbulb. It's amazing. These missiles are just streaking off into the sky. You wouldn't believe how fast they go.
They are. They're shooting. And it's sometimes difficult to see exactly what's happening now that the petrol fires, the oil fires, have turned the sky black and rather threatening looking. It looks a bit like one of those days in, say, South Florida before a tropical storm arrives.
I'm actually in a threadbare hotel room that has electricity only because of this noisy generator, and I apologize for the sound. That was lightning, Neil. That wasn't any kind of military equipment going off.
Mike, I'm glad you clarified that. I don't know if your heart stopped, but mine did.
No, I saw the light first, Neil.
NPR's Ann Garrels from her hotel room in Baghdad, Knight Ritter reporter Jonathan Landay in northern Iraq, Colin Soloway of Newsweek magazine embedded with the 101st Airborne Division, New York Times reporters Dexter Filkins with the 1st Marines and Mike Wilson with the 1st Battalion of the 10th Marines, The New Yorker's John Lee Anderson in Baghdad, and that last bit with NPR's Mike Schuster on a stormy but peaceful night in Nasiriyah. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.